even though we are expecting a couple of other members that should be here momentarily. But we want to respect everyone's time and get started. Welcome to the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force meeting. We are trying to lay the groundwork for the transition to the next phase of this work on issues related to poverty. And we just passed some new legislation this past session that will reconstitute the Ladder Out of Poverty group. And so we're going to talk about where we've been. Ah, there's one of our members. Welcome, Senator Sharon. What we want to do today is kind of review where we've been, where we're at, and where we need to go with regard to this legislative initiative. And I know many of you in the audience know this history, but maybe there's a few of you that do not know. But back in 2006, we passed legislation and signed by the governor setting up a commission to end poverty in Minnesota by the year 2020. And Senator Jungbauer and I participated in that commission. We met for a couple of years, traveled the state, talking with people who were living in poverty as well as people who are advocates and trying to help people work their way out of poverty. And in 2009, we came forward with our report. And it's an extensive report, and if any of you in the audience have not seen that and would like to get a copy, you can still get that online, right, Greg? let me show you what it looks like. This is what the commission report looks like. And following that, in 2010, we wanted to come up with some ways in which we could continue to work on the issues raised by the commission report. And so we got the legislature to approve and the governor to sign the establishment of this task force, the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force, which has been meeting now the last couple of years, trying to carry forward at least some of the recommendations that are in the commission report. And but we came to realize that there's no way we could expect everything to be followed up and be acted upon within that two-year time frame. This last session, we authored legislation to continue a task force for the next 2 years, and we renamed it and are in the process of reconstituting it in order to continue to work forward. And I want to call upon someone who was instrumental along the way in helping us rethink the framework here, Ron Elwood. And Ron, if you want to come forward, and while you're doing that, I'm going to ask members of the group here to identify themselves, and we want to welcome our newest member, Ann O'Connor. Ann, do you want to introduce yourself to everyone?
I'm Ann O'Connor from the Minnesota Department of Commerce.
Senator Kathy Sharon from Southern Minnesota.
Representative Patty Fritz from Southern Minnesota.
Representative Larry Hosh from Central Minnesota.
Senator Mike Jungbauer from the North Metro area. And I want to apologize for not meeting protocol. I typically, in my job, I'm outside running construction and sewer and water type stuff. I wasn't sure if I could make it here today, but I don't know. Luckily for you, maybe it rained, so we weren't quite doing as much out in the field as we would have normally. So I did make it here, but I forgot to throw my extra clothes in the car today.
Well, members of the House like to see the Senate dressed down once in a while. Mr. Elwood, would you kindly share with us, since you were instrumental in helping us put together a transition phase here on this effort to give some background and what it is we're trying to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. And first of all, before I do that, I want to acknowledge that you and Senator Jungbauer and Representative Hosh have announced your departures from the legislature. And so, I want to thank you so much for your great service. Thank you for your commitment to the clients that we're serving and trying to improve their lives and improve their financial status. And just really want to appreciate all the work you've done, not only on this task force, but in your tenure at the legislature. You've been incredibly valuable. Members will, I'm sure I speak for everybody in this room and throughout the state, that we'll miss you terribly, all of you. And so thank you, and we really appreciate very much what you've done. And this is certainly not to slight Representative Fritz or Senator Sharon in any way. We will hopefully see you all back. So, be working with you.
I join you in your words of kindness.
And we'll be continuing to work with you on this, and we also appreciate your commitment to this. So, to respond to your request, Mr. Chair, once the commission ended its work, this task force was constituted at your both of your the bills that you authored as a result of the bills you authored and Senator Jungbauer to focus in on the one of the aspects that the commission's work yielded, which was the development of assets and the ability of people to maintain financial stability. And the bill that you authored this year that was included in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill and then enacted into law that extends the life of the task force for another 2 years, it was renamed and refocused to really concentrate on this idea of asset building, because there is a national organization, CFED, which is an advocacy and policy organization out of Washington, D.C., which is a national leader in the asset development movement, which, as you may or may not know, has been kind of taking off around the country. Because I think what we're trying to do in this new guise of the task force is to create a forum around which all interests can agree. Because what we're suggesting here is the strategies, policies, initiatives that help people, individuals, and families to move through the spectrum of income insecurity and move them to a place where they can have a stable job, earn enough money to make ends meet, learn about financial literacy matters, be financially educated so that they can protect the assets and the income that they're starting to earn, begin to invest that money, as we all do, in trying to build a cushion, and then become secure and eliminate what a term of art called asset poverty, which means that you have enough income to make the man's meat, but if you get a bump in the road, you lose a job, or you're a seasonal worker and you get laid off for the period and your income drops, or you have your car breaks down, or any of those kinds of things that people on the margins wind up being set back, where people like us who are not in that situation can withstand a couple of months or 3 or 4 months. We have enough in the bank. We have enough liquid assets that we don't need to look to public programs. So the idea here is to create a much more a much larger group of Minnesotans who are financially stable, who do not need to look to the public program, so we're going to save public resources best we can, and to create a more healthy individual family situation and, in turn, a more healthy and stable Minnesota economy. That is the goal of all this. I would be hard-pressed to find anyone from any political spectrum, ideological spectrum, any place, who would disagree with these principles. Now, of course, the devil's always in the details. But if we can finally, if we can continue to come around together around a common goal, it certainly makes the details easier to work through. So I think that's the purpose. It's a framework that I think is something that can gain widespread and bipartisan support, and I think that's the goal that we're trying to reach by continuing the infrastructure of the task force, continuing ideas to do it. And finally, I just I can handle one of your agenda items, of the which I think is a nice segue, because it's what you've done in the past and what achievements the task force can claim credit for in terms of legislation, which actually goes to the very thing I was just talking about. So in 2012, members of this task force authored bills that were enacted into law. One, to ask the Department of Human Services to look at creating a uniform asset test across all programs. As you probably know, we have a variety of public programs, each of them having various asset limit eligibility criteria. So if you're getting program X, you can have a car that's worth $2,500. If you have program Y, you can have a car that's worth up to $7,000. The income eligibility is basically the same, but for some reason, over time, these things have become they're differentiating on assets. It makes no sense. I think what this the commission and your work with the commission, your discussions with citizens all around the country who are in unstable situations, I think you've come to understand that sometimes the public policies operate across purposes. So if we're trying to get people off of public programs, but we impoverish them in order to qualify for a program that they might only need for a couple of months or 6 months, then at the end of the time that the crisis is over, if we've made them spend down all their money in order to get that benefit, have we actually improved the long-term ability to reach financial security? Probably not. In fact, we've probably done the opposite. So the bill that you were able to get passed, I think, will go a long way to try to avoid those counter effects of public policy. The second thing that you were able to do, and I think we can all say thank you and we're all grateful, the FAME program, the Family Assets for Independence for Minnesotans, the Individual Development Account program, that is the state match for savings that individuals put into an account and that can go for starting a business, buying a house, or getting an education. That program was the funding for that program was eliminated in 2011, and you were kind enough to get a bill through that restored $250,000 to that program. So while it's not full funding restoration, it certainly sends an important signal that program, and by the way, I think part of the reason you're able to get that through is because of the results that have been demonstrated that this is a very successful program. This moves people through the system and away from the need for public resources. So with that, if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. And again, thank you very much and so grateful we all are for all the work you've done to help the clients that we all serve.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Elwood, for that summary and for all of the work that you have been doing with us along the way. As a member of the commission, a member and chair of this, co-chair of this task force, it is very clear to me that we're not going to be able to achieve our long-term goal here unless we help people build assets. I mean, that is really the key. And whatever we can do to assist people in building their assets so that they can weather the storms that most certainly will come, I think is a key. The other thing I think is a key, and we found this, Senator Marty, I'm sure he would agree, found this in our commission work, and that is that there are lots of good examples out there of programs that are producing results, helping people work their way out of poverty. FAME is one. Northern Connections is another. Circles of Support, those kinds of programs are proven. And we found that as the commission traveled the state. And so we as a task force need to do everything we can to help enhance and continue and expand those programs that have been proven to produce results. So anyway, that's a little bit of a background in terms of the transition here. Questions from members? Well, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and again, and thank all of you both for the work that you've done in this area, and I'm very grateful to have been appointed to the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force myself. And I was just looking, we're also going to lose Ron Szymanski, so we're losing him. You know, some people who have been involved and critical to this work. And as long as I have been on it, I felt that it was a complete bipartisan. It was, you know, I'm always amazed, and you know, as a poor Democrat, to sit with rich Republicans who understand me, who get it, and I think we all get it, and yet the work is still overwhelming. You know, in my life as an advocate for the poor, in my entire adult life, actually, you know, it's almost as though it's never going to end. And when I first heard, you know, end poverty by 2020, I thought, oh yeah, that's a nice catch-all phrase. But you know, I was beginning to believe it, and I hope that I can have some hope. And that's what I think this committee will continue to do. Is first of all, you have to have hope, and then you you know, because you certainly we don't have the assets. And when I think about the, you know, again, the literacy that people don't have in this day and age, when you think that everything is instant, everybody has a credit card, everybody has instant cash, everybody goes to a little thing, you know, at their bank. They don't even go in the bank. They just put a card in a machine and money comes out. And yet to know that people are losing their homes, losing their cars, and losing their jobs, I think that poverty has grown from my perspective. And I believe that this task force, the best thing that I think we did last year in session was to keep this task force alive. And it's a lot, the tremendous amount of work that has been done before I got on it will be the basis. But we still need input, and I hope that we continue to have that from the members that are leaving, and from all of the folks here, and that will come again, that the other people who are elected. This is, without a doubt, I think, in this day and age, with the most, you know, the recession, I call it a depression, you know, all of the things that are going on. When we look at this amount of work that we have done, and not able to get everything passed, but at least message it and continue to work together in a passionate way, I think that's tremendous. I think that speaks highly of all of us who care about the poor and ending poverty. Because, you know, myself, I'm a paycheck away from it. I've lived my whole life a paycheck away from poverty. And most of my friends are in the same boat. And I think it's worse now. I do feel that. But I do hope
I have that hope because of the work that has been done, that we can continue the work. And because we do have it in the law that this task force will continue for 2 more years, I think we have a lot to do in the next 2 years. So, again, thank you. I wanted to give you my thanks for the work that you've all done.
Well, thank you, Representative Fritz. And you mentioned one of the other, I think, successes that has happened in the last couple of years, and that's the work on financial literacy. We have been working closely with Commerce Department, Commissioner Rothman, and a number of meetings. We've been meeting with representatives from the banking community and other financial institutions to elicit their help and support. Ms. O'Connor, could you give us a little bit of an update on how those efforts are progressing?
Thank you, Chair Lanning. Well, since the last meeting, it looks like, which was held on December 5th, I was hired at the Department of Commerce, and a portion of my time is spent solely focused on financial literacy, which is why I'm a part of this task force. In 2012, Commissioner Rothman convened the Interagency Work Group on Financial Literacy, which was a first of its kind, and it included 10 state agencies, so we could all leverage all of our resources together to make a greater impact in financial literacy. Beginning of April 2012, Governor Dayton, for the first time, declared April Financial Literacy Month in Minnesota. That was a change. In the past, it had always been youth financial literacy, not financial literacy in general. We implemented a comprehensive outreach calendar focusing on Minnesota from kindergarten through retirement, and it included roughly 40 outreach events statewide during the month. At the end of the month, we held the second annual Financial Literacy Roundtable. We brought together 140 stakeholders, which doubled, more than doubled last year's attendance, and many of those people are in this room today, so thank you. And the focus of this year's roundtable was collaboration and understanding that to achieve this, we really have to work together. What we talked about mainly and the way we formatted it was focusing on where we are currently in Minnesota, where we would like to be going forward, and what do we need to do to achieve our goals. And we are currently compiling that report for everyone.
Good. Other questions or comments about what's been happening here the last few years? Senator?
Thank you, Chair Lanning. And, you know, as I'm thinking back and how do you hand off the baton to the next folks that are going to try to be members of this, one of the keys was when we did go around the state and we seen the different circles of support was one that really impressed me. And because it's people walking alongside of somebody that's going through a situation. The government can come in and hand you a check, and that doesn't solve the problem. But when you get community support and you get folks walking alongside of you, that changes things because you know you have a friend to go to when you're going through something. And so as folks move forward and if something happens and they fall back, they know there's people waiting to catch them and help move through that. And I think that's one of the things we really need to communicate. It's kind of interesting because this commission and then the task force has caused me to look back and say, well, what's going on in Minnesota? What's going on in the country that we're losing this financial literacy? And it was interesting, so I'll just share with you guys. I picked up at a garage sale, and a friend of mine picked up some other things. We picked up some math books and things from 1959 and 1960. And one of them was called Shop Mathematics. I'm just saying this because it kind of speaks to our education system and you know, are we getting too broad? Are we not focusing in for people to do things? And I'm looking through this Shop Mathematics, and just so you guys in the audience understand, it's said in the beginning it's for people from eighth grade on up, and it's made in a simple form so that everybody can understand it, and those folks that can't understand, as they called it, upper-level mathematics, could get jobs like in the foundry and machine shops and things like that. And it had complex angles and complex mathematics to figure all this these things out. And I'm thinking, our graduating seniors could never go into this 1959 Shop Mathematics, which was for the people that were failing at the real stuff, and even understand this today. So there's something going on out there that people aren't catching on, and math is part of a key. If you don't understand some of the simple math and that's that financial literacy piece, is how do you put your budget together? How do you know where to put your money? How do you know how to get assets? How do you know what you need? And then again, I'm very proud on that asset thing that we're talking about, making that even across the board so that folks can gain something and not have to move all the way back. And sadly, out in the public, we have to communicate that too, because Minnesota's had a couple high-profile fraud cases for people that have had a lot of assets and then gone in and got assistance. So we have to overcome those kind of deals as well. I remember one of them in Blaine, where the folks had, I think it was $110,000 in automobile assets that, and they're still getting public programs. And every time one of those kind of fraud cases hits, the general public starts making the assumption that more people are fraudulently getting things. And those are things we have to work at overcoming. So just to message and talk about the financial literacy and the asset development when things are going on around, we have to be pretty well versed on, you know, that's an exception out there, something that, you know, there's always going to be folks out there trying to cheat the system. And we just have to deal with it that way. We have to talk to the public about we can't overcome the cheaters. They're going to be in society. But we have to make sure that we're moving folks ahead. And that's the thing where everybody can agree, because if we get people working, if they're paying taxes and stuff, that's everybody's goal, because that's what we call a success from the government standpoint, is when people are out there doing what they want to do for those that can work. So it is communicating those things, and I think so. You folks out there that can bring the new legislators around and introduce them to those programs and the people that are running them, that was key to me, to be able to understand that and see that. So I hope that's one of the first things you do with the new folks that come on board.
Well, there's no further question about what's been happening the last couple of years, then we need to move to what we would like to see happen going forward. And the first thing is that all of you are going to continue to be members of this task force until the end of the year, at the very least. Mr. Hubinger did some checking on that. Do you want to report to the group?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Chair Lanning had asked me to just review the language in the legislation that was passed this year. There's a copy in your packet of the 2012 session laws, Chapter 247. And we weren't as careful as we perhaps could have been in drafting this legislation. On the second page, the backside of that, there's the provision for that relates to appointments and designations on the task force, and there's a reference there, a date there to 2012, which may cause a little bit of confusion. I checked with Mark Shepard, counsel for House State Government Finance and the State Government Operations Committee, and he thought that a reasonable interpretation of that language was that the current members of the task force could continue until the end of this calendar year, and then after the elections and swearing in January, that the leadership from the House and Senate could make new appointments.
Any questions about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. The report, it keeps going.
What's that?
If you don't submit a report, the commission keeps going, doesn't it? Right. The way I read right. it. So if we don't submit our report, we're good to go.
We should also comment on that. The legislation passed in 2010 required a report, which, in effect, the legislation we passed this year passed us on that.
The language that was adopted in the 12th session eliminated that requirement, but also explicitly provides for the new task force to expire in 2014.
With a report due at that time?
Mr. Chair, the new language provides for the task force to provide recommendations for the 2013 and 2014 sessions. It doesn't specify that they be in the form of reports.
Okay. Good. Representative Hodge.
Mr. Chair, this is one area that I wanted to discuss when, you know, for future initiatives. This task force originally was also set to expire in 2012, and the legislature extended its life. And, the asset development and financial literacy is an important part, but it's only one part of a very, very large puzzle when it comes to poverty. And I would hope that as this commission moves forward, that part of its recommendations is not only specifically focused on what's outlined in the legislation, but what initiatives can be taken after 2014. It should continue. There should be a focus on the cycle of poverty and how do we engage parents into early childhood education and being competent parents and learning that process and everything else that is involved when it comes to the cycle of poverty. This is just one part of it. So I hope that is something that this task force will seriously consider in its written recommendations to the legislature.
Well, as the author of that language, my intent clearly was that this, as a legislative task force, the task force is free to come forward with whatever recommendations it deems appropriate, not just related to the whole area of literacy and building assets. Obviously, our colleagues can say either yay or nay to whatever ideas come out of this task force. And so I, for what it's worth, my intent and interpretation would address what you're saying, Representative Hodge, that we ought to be free to be looking at other things that may be necessary. But we would hope that just as it's happened the last couple of years, that things that have come out of discussions and out of the work of this group, legislation has been crafted, and we would hope that the same thing would be happening in the next couple of years. Any other thoughts along those lines? We do have a quorum. Let's back up to number one on the agenda and approve the minutes. But you take a look at the December 5th meeting of the task force, and we have a motion to approve those minutes. So moved. Moved by Senator Marty.
Second.
Seconded by Senator Jungbauer. Any additions or corrections to those minutes? If not, all in favor of those minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved. Senator Marty, as one of the co-chairs of the original commission, would you give us some of your thoughts about what's been happening and where we need to go?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess in response to what was said earlier, I think that this ladder out of task force now to be the asset development and financial literacy network or task force, I think is a good part and a good step of what we talked about in the Poverty Commission. I also know when was that report done? 2009. January 2009. That we had 11 years till the 2020. Deadline that commission's report was supposed to be adopted, accomplished by. And I think that the most important thing that this has done is keep that on the agenda and start taking some steps forward in these two areas. I have great concerns that, if anything, since 2009, partly because of the recession, we've gone backwards. We're further away from the goal than we were then, and obviously the clock keeps ticking. There's no penalty for the commission or the task force or whatever if we don't do it, but obviously the point is not for the commission or task force to to do it, but for us to address the problem. And I guess I hope that as we come forward, as our successor task force continues to move forward, I think Representative Hosh's comment is well taken, and you commented on the same thing, that the intent is to continue moving in all the areas we have to address for making that a reality. But I think we have to find a way to get both the legislature and governor to take it seriously, because I think right now we're not, if you look at the trajectory we're on, where it's been a trajectory that has a few ups and a number of downs at the same time. So it's there's still plenty of hope that we can do this, but I think we have to recommit ourselves as a legislature and get the governor on board to do the same. And each of these little steps is part of it, but as I think a lot of us agree, that's only part of it. We're losing a lot of people here.
Mm-hmm. We want to give folks in the audience an opportunity as well to give us your advice as to what we ought to be thinking about and working on the next legislative session. And for those of us who won't be here as legislators, we certainly will remain interested and involved, and I would hope to have an opportunity to help orient the new task force members to what Senator Marty, Senator Jungbauer, and I have been working on for the last several years, in order that some of what we've learned doesn't get lost, but get shared with our colleagues who follow us. So I want to give anyone in the audience an opportunity to come and give us your advice or counsel as to what we ought to be doing or concerned about. Don't be bashful.
Yeah. And I guess if anybody would be coming up, when you have a report, I've seen too many times in my tenure here, 10 years, but we do reports and then we shelve them. Somebody comes up with an end, and then nobody ever acts on it, and so that's always been our key to keep moving something forward, to make sure something always stays active here. So we went from the commissioned end poverty to the ladders out of poverty task force to the asset development financial literacy task force. The whole idea is to keep our eye on the ball and not let that report die someplace on some shelf.
Right. Please come forward. And identify yourself. Each of you, identify yourself for the record, please. We are recording this, right? Yes, we are.
Bob DeBoer, Director of Policy Development for the Citizens League, and I didn't bring the report, which means we can't shelve it, right?
Yes.
We have been working on a few things. You may remember from last December, we gave you the presentation on the savings innovation product we're working on. We're actually having an event Friday morning, Citizens League is, to a workshop to look at that further. But we have a whole framework of stuff that really asset development is a key part of. We're setting up family independence demonstrations for 2013 with five key partners, and one of them actually is Circles of Support. The others in the metro area are the Islamic Civic Society, the Indian Women's Resource Center, Project for Pride and Living, and the Ramsey Washington Community Action Partnership. And the whole basis of this is that we want to create the evidence that families who set goals together and are accountable to each other should not be under this kind of rule system that we have in our public assistance system, and that that needs to be our goal for a new public assistance system. Because right now, their capacity, once they, as Senator Jungbauer said, once they start on public assistance, their capacity is now focused on navigating that system. That's what they spend their time doing. And from the Citizens League perspective, this is backwards, because now you're using your capacity to prove your neediness. You're not using it to develop, to be independent, which is what I think we all agree. This isn't a politically partisan issue at all. We want more families to be independent. So these family independence demonstrations that we're building our partnerships around are meant to be that model that then creates evidence that we can have a much larger groups do this. And that means we have to look at the asset, not just uniform asset tests, but ones that actually, where people's assets don't count because they're doing exactly what we say we want while they're on public assistance. We have lifetime limits on a lot of our major public assistance now. It doesn't make sense to, if we want people to be independent for the long term, to count those assets against them. If they're setting goals and being accountable, there is national evidence. There's a group called the Family Independence Initiative that started in Oakland and has now done pilots in San Francisco and in Boston. And we've sent them a letter of intent to be one of their first national partners. They're looking for 2 to 3 national partners. They've actually got the experience on doing this with groups of families. Takes people a little while to learn how to not respond to the public assistance system and to how to actually set authentic goals with each other and report back. So the asset piece is really so we're working right now. We've had a few meetings with folks in human services and at the counties and kind of looking for, you know, what these potential barriers might be in public, you know, the asset limits and things like that. But we are working aggressively on putting this in place for 2013. So hope that whoever's part of this group, we could come and talk to about possible legislative changes we might need.
Good. Thank you very much for that work and for the offer of connecting with the task force in the future. I think it would be great for the Citizens League to give the task force your ideas as to what can be done legislatively to help move these things along.
We have a few specific. We want enabling legislation for the savings promotion raffle, as it's called, or prize link savings, which would allow credit unions, but unfortunately not banks because of federal law, to offer what we think are an innovative approach to get more people to save. So financial literacy is extremely important, but on some level you need to attract more people to save initially, and then you get these opportunities for a moment to do more of the financial literacy and training. One of the groups we're working with on this, Accountability Minnesota, who you know, Ann Johnson's going to be at our event on Friday morning to help talk about how this product could connect to the work they do. So there's a whole number of things around there. That's just one tool. We think there's other potential products that could be developed, hybrid between say home equity and reverse mortgages, you know, things that keep the cost down so people can access their own wealth more quickly and directly than products have done in the past when they have a financial crisis. We think we're trying to work. I'm having some discussions with hopefully with U.S. Bank tomorrow about, are you interested in developing some products that are more innovative on this line? So we think there's some things that can be done there. Legislatively, it's probably going to be the asset limit. Can we not count some things when people are engaging in exactly the kind of behavior we all agree they should? That's probably going to be the big one for 2013.
Are you connected? Do you say you're connected with the department in discussions about the asset issues?
We just talked to David Godfrey, who's the Medicaid director, because he gave us a lot of good connections, but we need to follow up. And of course, it's hard to get people's attention. This legislature has given them a lot of work over in human services.
Yeah. I just noticed the other day they got the list of all the reports that we've asked for. I think they've got 2.5 pages for human services, if I recall correctly. So they've got a lot of work that's been assigned for the next 2 years.
Yeah, and we think this ties in, and I'm sorry, I haven't been very formal in this task force, Chair Lanning, we think it also ties in with our long-term care recommendations. It isn't just about those in poverty, but those middle income who, if we don't change some of the dynamic with our Medicaid and some of our other things, you have this whole group of people who could slip into poverty. So we think a lot of these things, a lot of these policy solutions intersect, not just for low income, but for middle income Minnesotans.
Any other questions from Senator Martin?
Mr. Chair, Mr. DeBoer, when you mentioned maybe needing legislation on the raffle idea, in other words, somebody has decided, somebody checked, and you've concluded that under our current laws that would be a lottery and therefore...
Yes, Senator Marty, Chair Lanning, not because of risk of loss, because there would be no risk of loss, but because of the consideration, as they call it, where to get the chance to win, you put the money in the account, that makes it a lottery. And so we have had discussions with the Gambling Control Board, and they are... asking Commerce if they actually don't think they need to regulate it, and they're asking Commerce if they're comfortable being the group that would, since they regulate credit unions right now. But it is an interesting one, and our workshop actually gets into those questions this Friday. What do you think gambling is? Because obviously gambling is such always a hot button at the legislature. If there's no risk of loss, do you think it's gambling? Because under our legal definition, it would be the Gambling Control Board right now that this would come under. So we have started to work through some of those questions.
Mr. Chair, I've never heard this idea till about a year ago, is it Michigan where they've been doing a lot of this and expanding a lot?
Yes, Senator Marty, Chair Lanning, the Michigan Save to Win program, they discovered when this idea came up that they had passed some legislation decades ago. They didn't even know the genesis of it, so they could just start it without passing new legislation. And the first year was only 8 credit unions, but then expanded to over 40 in the second year. There are a lot of questions about, you know, what the return on investment is for financial institutions with these customers, but they're getting new people in the door to save on a regular basis. And part of it is the structure of the product is such that you get a chance to win every time you save $25. And then there's a maximum of 120 times over the course of the year. So what that means is that you can't have excessive amounts of money and get yourself a better chance to win, but it creates a regular incentive to save so that each month there's smaller monthly winnings, so they keep that momentum going. And they're actually finding out in the newest research that the grand prize is not so much a big draw, that perhaps the smaller monthly winnings is actually more important for the pattern of regular savings. So we're thinking this is one tool that has potential. The credit union network has said they're interested, but they still have to this is just enabling legislation. They would still have to decide to structure those products and actually do it.
Mr. Chair, I do like to hear that the research is saying that the big prize is not a big thing, because I heard one news reporter read somewhere about the Michigan thing, and they were saying how effective it was at getting new people banked. And so I think that's huge success, and they were saying how some people who would have been putting in $20 a week in lottery tickets were doing this instead. And, you know, I mean, I'd much rather they do it this way, even though their chances of winning are under the lottery very slim, and their chances of winning a grand prize here is. Philosophically, if you're going to have this sort of thing, I think the idea that it's not that you have a chance at this huge jackpot for doing it, but in exchange for doing the right thing and saving money, you might get a boost in your savings by every month we give out these many smaller prizes. So I'll encourage you as you, I won't be there on Friday, but I encourage you as you keep looking at it to see if it's doable without the huge prizes, but more the small incentives for people to do it, because it seems, sounds like it doesn't take a lot of incentive to get somebody who's never saved money to do small amounts, even if they can barely afford to.
From Senator Marty, from what I can tell, that's correct. Simply having each credit union be able to hold up, here's our monthly winner each month, gets people excited about it, even if it's only $50, even if it's only $200, something like that. They initially did a 100,000 grand prize because they really thought they had to have that six-digit number, right, to get people to pay attention. But that's what's interesting to me is because I thought, well, that is what keeps the money in the account all the way through the year, right, because then all those are added up as this is how many chances you have. But the latest research out of Michigan said people were much more interested in the monthly smaller prizes. So I thought that was interesting because those resources would need to come from the credit unions themselves to pool it or from some other source to have that kind of big grand prize.
Thank you, Mr. DeBoer.
Thank you very much.
Keep the group abreast of what is happening.
Certainly will.
Thank you. Others who wish to come forward.
You're going to have to bear with me because I don't think I've ever done this before.
Well, that's always should be a first time.
My name is Tom Wolfgram, and I have a it's a startup messaging company called USA Values LLC. And one of the things that it's done over the course of the last couple of years is it's really zeroed in on a concept of first things first, right the first time. And in the private sector, all turnarounds and restarts basically are forced to go back and sort through what is first things first. Okay, it's the only way that you can find the capital and the ROI to go forward. Now, in the public sector, you know, that isn't quite as obvious, but I'm sure that it's going to get more obvious as funds get tighter and tighter. Representative Hosh, is it? Okay. I would like to make a commitment to see you and to give you some materials that are basically online and active at this time. And I would basically contribute the your own online materials to basically take a first things first, right the first time approach to the concept of building assets, to the concept of literacy that ultimately ends up in financial literacy, but obviously you need to be literate to start with, and basically go all the way in that concept to the early education, and basically see all of this as basically one thing, and it's that we start too late with our youngest, okay? And we can start in the middle and solve some problems for the middle in that stretch, say 8th grade, 10th grade, 21 years old. We can start there, and we can do some very good things, but we never get to eliminating the flow that would basically allow you to sunset a program. So I'd like to do that and stay in touch. My particular business is not about poverty. It's about early education. But as I look at the two issues, you know, when you take it back to its initial issue, it's the same thing. And we're forced. We're forced to start looking for things that are going to have an ROI, a return on investment. I'm going to spend just a 5 minutes now to just make you think, because you've had a task force. You've had a task force that's gone on for 4 years. You have, you talk about reports, okay? I don't want to read a report. And the millennial, okay, and I'm not a millennial, you can tell, okay, but the millennial doesn't want to read a report anymore. They want to read a tweet. They want the tweet to link to something of substance that they can look at, okay? And they want that thing of substance to make sense with other things of substance. But they are not interested anymore. They're too smart. They're too smart for that. They're not uneducated. They basically don't need a 10-point report. They don't need a white paper. They don't need these things. They want to get to something that makes sense. That's what all of our uprising is all about. I mean, they're basically things don't make sense to them because we're just rehashing the same old, same old. So I would suggest, Larry, that you and I get a framework for you to put the most important 15 or 20 things that got accomplished into a tweet and a landing page that makes some sense in connection with a listing and definition of character assets and attributes, attributes being the assets that you would like to see people have. To have a chance at success. Enough said. I'm open to questions.
I have your website up right now, so well, I'd be happy to talk to you in the future.
You got the coupon site up? USAValuesCoupons.com. Nope, USAValuesCoupons.com. Okay? Because all those messages are put together like coupons. Okay.
I think your message of maybe there needs to be new ways of coming at this is a good message for all of us to hear.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's life is changing.
Yep.
You know, I'm sudden setting.
Some of us are too.
Yeah.
Others who wish to be heard. Thank you for that, Mr. Wolfgram. Ms. Johnson.
Hi, I'm Pam Johnson with the Minnesota Community Action Partnership, and also want to thank all of you for your hard work over the last couple of years, and appreciate what Senator Jungbauer said about the tours. Actually, both of you, Representative Lanning and Jungbauer, about the value of the tours that you took across the state. And with the Community Action Network, and I'm sure many of the other partners in the room here and others would love to help provide you with opportunities to look at best practices also in the coming couple of years. A couple of ideas. We are thrilled that FAME got some funding this last session. It's just great to be able to keep the program going. We just had a FAME Council meeting before I came here, and the members wished for me to thank you also and to say that we would love to work for complete restoration in the next session if possible. Back up to the 500,000 where we started, and if permissible, even go higher. I know Representative Hosh had a bill to bring it up to a million biennially, and that sure would serve a lot more folks. We're definitely not at capacity. We have waiting lists and could serve a lot more folks. So we'd love to see FAME and actually IDAs in general keep growing. Ron had mentioned the return on investment. We had a great study done this last session by some Mankato students who showed a 94% success rate of the small businesses that were started through FAME. And we're now working with two Humphrey graduates to look at the home ownership and the education assets as well to see where how they're doing. And this is over a 10-year period, and so we'll have that data to share with you and the other members coming up this fall. So IDAs, we'd love to see continued support for those. And then lastly, financial literacy. You've been just great on focusing on the issue of financial literacy, really for all ages. You know, we, through our network, through many of the networks here, from youth all the way to especially our elders as well. They're really being hit by a lot of scams. I know the Commerce Department's really working a lot on some of the elder abuse and some of the scams that are hitting, in particular, seniors. So financial literacy, that includes all ages, culturally specific financial education. We, through our network, provide a lot of train-the-trainer for frontline workers. And we've trained about 1,200 frontline staff over the last 8 years to provide financial education, and had a really successful training this last August up in White Earth Reservation, and trained 50 frontline workers who work at the various with the various reservations, tribal governments, and just really excited to see that spread using the financial education tools in various settings. And just to highlight what seems to be most successful, I know the University of Minnesota Extension, other groups have some really great financial education programs as well, so there are many to look at and examine. What we have found is it's that coaching. It's that one-to-one. You can teach the classes, but if you don't have someone to go back to and say, I'm trying this out, this isn't quite working, or I made a mistake, it's just much more successful if you have a coach, someone ongoing to meet with after you've taken the classes. We're excited to possibly try this fall a youth IDA with a group in Rice County. So we're just a small pilot, but trying it out again with youth. And I think that's kind of the two points that I kind of wanted to make. So
thank you, Senator Barty.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Johnson, one specific, precise question and a more general one. FAME program, there's a dollar for dollar federal match. Is there a cap on how much we can get from them on that?
Well, at the there's currently an opportunity for $1 million every year. We haven't been able to find that non-federal match at this point, but if we could get up there, we could really triple the amount that we're serving right now.
And then, Mr. Chair, the other question, I don't know if it's for you or for Ms. O'Connor, with the literacy classes, training for adults and others and so on, is there any online kind of thing that everybody agrees with? This is a great program that's free. That, in other words, if you see somebody, if I as an individual run into somebody who's doesn't get it, that the 20% interest on their credit card is putting them further behind all the time and something else, is there some easy access that you can say, hey, this, either nationally or some of the state groups that put together a, here's where you can spend a few hours on a computer and help train yourself. It doesn't provide the coaching you said, but is there something like that available?
Ms. O'Connor?
Senator Marty, or Chair Senator Marty. We at the Department of Commerce and the Interagency Work Group, we have not certified any curriculum as thus far, but the Minnesota Saves website has multiple resources already online that people could access if they had questions. We are looking to Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
We're looking to, you know, that could be a recommendation that comes out of this year's roundtable report. What are we going to do in Minnesota? Should we have something that the state looks at as, you know, the best resource possible?
Thanks for it. And that website is helpmnsave.org. There's a link that for financial education. So thanks for – I was going to mention the same thing. So thank you.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to chime in about in the area of the elderly that I have been involved in most of my life as well. In the nursing home industry, now that I am 67 years old and eligible, I guess, because my home is paid for. Many of my friends are doing the reverse mortgage. You know, that bothers me.
It just seems like, more and more of the people my age are doing that. And I am concerned about that. And I think that we ought to look at that. Commerce folks should take a look at that. And then, the fact of the matter is that most people my age have enough savings to bury myself and my husband. Then I have my asset, my home. In order to, and then a little bit of a pension and Social Security, I think I'm okay, but you never know. One catastrophic illness and that the house goes and the property goes. So, but a lot of people my age really are getting into that reverse mortgage thing, I think, prematurely. I'd like to take a look at that, and I think this is the team that could do that with all the help from Commerce and yourself, Ms. Johnson, as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Thank you for all your work on these issues over the years. Others?
Hello, my name is Trish Olson. I'm with the University of Minnesota, and especially in the University and with Extension. I wanted to speak to the one question about other online courses. I actually have two things to speak about, but in partnership with DEED and the Department of Human Services and the Workforce Centers, Extension is doing online courses for MFIP participants, mm-hmm. in which they can take classes. Sometimes they, in addition to work, they also have some educational opportunities. And so we've been working with them with some pilot programs in which we're now ready to launch. And it's everything about stretching your food dollar, stretching your budget. And so it's a great opportunity. We're learning together with the participants what's good online learning. So it's interactive and not just listen to a narrated PowerPoint or something. But I think, there are many things online, but within Minnesota alone, University of Minnesota Extension and Workforce Centers and Department of Human Services are partnering to do that. So I thought I'd just mention that. Any questions about that? And then I just wanted to do encourage you to utilize your access. I'm just so thrilled with the Department of Commerce pulling together the state agencies. And as I was thinking here, I was thinking you have the opportunity here to kind of oversee and think about asset development and financial literacy within all the agencies that you have an opportunity to oversee, empower. And so some of the ideas that I thought for the coming year is to really think about the student loan crisis. It is here. It can also be prevented for the new, but it is here for those who are currently truly really underwater. And how might you work with the good things that the Department of Education is already doing, but how can you encourage even more to prevent future debt? And how do you work with those who have the debt? And so I think that you have a purview over many organizations that look at this issue. And how can you kind of monitor that, help that, think about that? Another emerging issue is around disaster work. University of Minnesota Extension and almost every state agency was at the disaster recovery centers right after the 4th of July. People are not only one paycheck away from poverty, they're one disaster away from poverty. And especially when it's water-related or flood. I know I have an electric personality.
So. Somebody has a cell phone.
Unintended. Our experience at the disaster recovery centers really told us that there is important work to be done. And it's not always a handout. It's about thinking about financial literacy. Do folks have money set aside to deal with the disasters? And I was hearing from Mark Seeley from the University of Minnesota. This seems to be a pattern that is not rare anymore, but he said we're seeing more and more floods in the fall season. He said, so we may have even more flash floods coming. Not to say the sky is falling, but it is a financial literacy asset development issue in disaster work. We appreciated having all of our colleagues, our state agencies around us at those disaster recovery centers, but that is, again, let's think proactively around that versus always reactive. Also, the work around the Attorney General and the Department of Commerce are doing about reducing fraud and deceptive practices. It's one thing to build your assets, but it's another to quickly lose them in a quick scam, which appears good but is poor. So how do we have a social marketing campaign about helping people be proactive and be really confident in being good decision makers? We have something happening in the entire nation around health care. Where does that impact assets and financial literacy? It isn't something over here that's just totally separate. Our risk management in our lives as households is a central part of our of where we stand in our assets. We could lose them with one catastrophic illness. We can maintain them by having a small policy. I think that healthcare information could be really a large piece of your monitoring as a committee. What does that mean to the assets? Are they being preserved through having maybe some people having healthcare that they didn't have before? I know it's kind of a controversial topic, but risk management is not. We know that risk management is needed for families to be financially solvent and also to build their assets. Coming from Extension, I can't help but think about the drought and floods and family finances that are supported by farm incomes. And so here's another opportunity where your Department of Agriculture that you all work with and oversee, where does that fall in? And how does that, what is asset development there and what is financial management there? What was already mentioned was about elders. We have elders retiring into poverty or elders not able to retire. And our Department of Human Services, indeed, work closely with elder employment and elder opportunity. And again, you have that oversight to think about that. So I was trying to think about, what does oversight mean? What happens when there's a large industry that comes in? What do you do? An environmental impact, right? You think about, well, what's going to be the impact to the environment? What if there was a family asset impact study on legislation? What would this legislation or idea or interpretation of a rule, how would that affect families? And it may not be a great additional cost to do that kind of a swipe or assessment of impending legislation, say, well, how would that affect families' assets? To the positive? To the negative? You know, what's kind of the net of that kind of rule, whether it's changing the asset limits or a new opportunity or something for families? I would say we don't expect you to do this alone. There's two very active organizations of nonprofits, businesses, lobbying groups, but there's two groups that I would like to put forward that I have been involved with, and one is a newly formed asset development group, and the second is the Minnesota Family Financial Literacy Group, and we look to be in partnership with you in the future. So, those are some of my thoughts as I was listening and hoping that that most important as our two coalitions in the community are, we have the Asset Development and the Financial Literacy Coalition. I see you as an opportunity to the coalition of the state agencies, working together and thinking how together you impact the assets in families.
Thank you. Lots of good ideas there.
I think one that that I was made aware of early on, and I don't know how many other members were aware of things, but folks, like I guess the one incident was a dairy farmer And so in terms of judging assets, you things are depreciable. You end up adding back in that, and that was something we were working on. So it looks like on paper that folks have money, but that's not spendable income. You have an asset that you can't get your arms around, you can't borrow against, and so when a disaster comes, that's something that affects a family's income immediately, and there's no way that they can overcome that, and that's one of those kind of things we need to really think about when we're putting plans together.
Anyone else that would like to be heard? If not, thank you for that. And Mr. Hewinger, I would assume with our minutes that there will be sort of a listing of all these different ideas so that we have a task force next year can have some of those to chew on. Good. Any other questions or observations, comments that any of the members wish to make at this point? Representative Hodge.
Just some thoughts of how the task force is going to move forward and with the large turnaround. It may be kind of unorthodox, but it might be a good idea to reconvene this task force after the elections, but before session starts. I'm sure each caucus is going to be able to identify what new members are excited and engaged about certain issues, and it might be an opportunity to engage somebody early, provide some of these fresh faces who are excited to do something and get involved to kind of hit the door running, and a way to get some energy on this issue. So something to consider.
I think that's a good idea. I certainly would be happy to help facilitate that, and it could be a part of an orientation session for those who might be wanting to and willing to carry forward the work of this this group. So I would hope that all of us who are not back would be willing to be a part of that, probably sometime later November, early December.
After deer hunting.
After deer hunting.
After deer hunting. Wolf hunting.
Senator.
I wanted to thank everybody that we're working with, and I was going to start mentioning names, and I thought no, because then I'll forget people. And everybody here and a lot of folks that aren't here helped me and walked alongside. And every time we had questions, they'd come to my office, we'd meet, we'd do whatever was needed to move something forward. And so I really appreciate that. My whole time here as a senator, I've just worked with so many phenomenal people that carry that torch out there that really help the public. I will mention one, Ron Elwood, because you spent a lot of time with me. And, I think maybe I had some issues when I first came here. No, I still have issues as I leave. But just to understand, and that means a lot. In other areas, there's lobbyists that come and go, and they'll tell you a little piece, and then they won't work with you on the whole thing to understand. And so everybody that's involved in these kind of things is very much hooked in an intricate part of moving things forward. So there's nobody that leaves you in the lurch when you have a question. So it's a phenomenal group working on these issues. Thank you.
I would certainly second that as well. And of all the different interests, representations that we hear from as legislators, I'd have to say that the people that are in this room today have been by far and away the most helpful, helping us as legislators understand the issues, supportive of things that we're doing right, and constructive critics when we're doing things wrong. That is very, very important. And as someone who will not be back in this role next year, I would hope that all of you would be committed to continuing that approach, because that's the way we can get good things done for the people of Minnesota, is when we're working together in that way, in a respectful and supportive and encouraging sort of way. And so thank you all for that. And Any other comments for today? Senator?
Mr. Chair, since you two both thank the audience and everyone, I think it's time for us to thank you as well. It's been a pleasure working with you both on the Poverty Commission and on this, and I think it was the two of you who helped keep this together and helped it go on the last couple of years. So I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I would hope that those of you that will be back will continue to be involved with this this effort and help to recruit replacements for those of us who are not going to be back in the legislative body. So with that, thank you all for being here today. We are adjourned.